Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Optus Sport Football Podcast. I'm Mark Schwarzer, joined today, as always, by Phil Kitromilides. How's it going, Phil?
Hello, Schwarzer. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Great to see your face, as always. And Michael Bridges, fresh from a visit to St. James's Park. Bridgie, that's got to go down as a Premier League classic already. I mean, what a game that was you were at.
Absolutely unbelievable, Swartz. That's one of the things I said on commentary, mate. I said, this is a Premier League classic. And it was so good to have the Premier League back after the international break. I was delighted. And what a way to kick off the Easter weekend. Newcastle was absolutely bouncing. And I had plenty to talk about, Swartzy. That was the joy of doing co-commentary on a game like that. Plenty to talk about, mate. So it was awesome.
The other thing quickly is that Newcastle, did they dodge a bullet with Calvin Phillips?
Yes, they certainly did, mate. They did. He changed the game, actually. He was probably Newcastle's best player when he came on.
Right, let's move straight on to Manchester City against Arsenal. It was hyped as obviously like a potential title decider, but it didn't really reach its heights, did it, Phil? We were expecting so much more from it. Is it? I mean, that's football, right? That happens. We've seen it before in all different games, the big games. You think this is going to be another classic, but it wasn't, was it?
It wasn't, no. From a kind of spectacle perspective, it really, really wasn't. It wasn't a great game of football. It wasn't. There wasn't a to and fro to it. There wasn't pace. There wasn't chance. There weren't many shots, you know, on target. So no, it wasn't a great spectacle. And we have had some really, really great games in the Premier League recently. You know, the Liverpool Manchester City game we had a few weeks ago was top notch. But this was a little bit different. And I don't know if you guys felt the same. This is a little bit different because Arsenal wanted it to be a little bit different. I felt that Arsenal came and, you know, they played for a draw. They did really well. They were set up so well. And if you think about their record against Manchester City, which has been, you know, catastrophic before this season, if you think of this game last season when they lost 4-1 and the difference from that game to this one, and obviously there's two big differences in personnel because they had Saliba playing this weekend and he was out injured last season. And obviously
he was man of the match, Phil.
He was man of the match, literally. I mean, he was ahead in all the metrics. He was outstanding. And then you've got Declan Rice as well in the heart of midfield, who's really important when you don't have the ball as well, in terms of the shape and structure, which Arsenal didn't have the ball a lot of the time. They knew they weren't going to have the ball a lot of the time, but they were set up so well to limit Manchester City's use of the ball. And I just thought it was a really, really good defensive performance from Arsenal. And they had a couple of half chances on the break as well. So yeah, overall it was great from Arsenal. Not necessarily brilliant to watch, and they have been brilliant to watch in recent weeks, and 8 matches in a row winning, scoring loads of goals as well. This was interesting because it showed that they can do something a little bit different, and I think they did it really, really well.
Yeah, Swartz, you know I love me food, right? So we're out for the families on the Easter Sunday. We're all having this big Sunday roast, and I said, listen, it's 2:30, we've got to get in here, get our food and get out, because there was a big game starting at 4:30. It's Man City against Arsenal. If I'd known how boring it was going to be, I would have had another 5 Yorkshire puddings, mate. I wouldn't have ran home to get that game in. But I think I totally agree with Phil, what he's saying. Arsenal came to totally disrupt and nullify everything Man City had and play for the draw and hopefully catch them on a counter-attack or a set play. And like Phil said, they did have chances. And I think I'm going to take it away from the spectacle. It should have been one of the greatest Premier League games of this season so far. It wasn't. But Arsenal came with a game plan, and Arteta and his team did absolutely fantastic, because there's not many teams go to the Etihad and don't concede a goal. So fair play to Arsenal. They've kept the title race wide open, and the only people that were happy at the weekend was the Liverpool fans and Jurgen Klopp.
Pep Guardiola alluded to it, didn't he? He said that he thought he was very happy and very pleased with the way his team performed, but Arsenal sat really deep and kind of implied that they didn't come to play, right? So there were three shots on target the entire game. Saliba was obviously one of those big reasons as well, as to why that was, and also I think the dominance of Man City in terms of possession at times. So it wasn't a stinker, really, but it was really a job well done, wasn't it, by Arteta and Arsenal. Bridgie?
They looked so organised, Swartzy. They knew exactly what they were going to do defensively. I mean, they had a back four, and then at times it turned into like a back six. Both the wide midfielders were coming in and tucking back, and they shuffled so well. So what they did very, very well was the organisation. And I was keeping an eye on Saliba. Like Phil and you mentioned, he won absolutely everything. He is just colossal. But the organisation from Declan Rice in that midfield, he was dropping in sometimes into centre-half role to make a third following the attacking midfielder. And then he was organising. And as soon as he came out of his position and went back into the midfield to go and put pressure on the ball player, whether Odegaard got it or whoever in that midfield, he was turning around to make sure that that pocket of space that he was vacating was taken. I thought it was very, very smart. And to think that Arteta and the Arsenal came up with that game plan in such a short period of time after the international break, that takes a lot of doing and a lot of communication understanding. So fair play to Arsenal. Yep, they did very, very well. And they just really frustrated Man City. They let them have the ball. The possession stats were ridiculous. But was there really any chances created? Nah.
Bridgie, I just want to follow on. Roy Keane said on a coverage over the weekend that Haaland, for his overall play in and around the game, he looks like a League Two player. Do you agree with that?
I wouldn't say he's a League Two player, Swartzy, because if he was, he'd be on 100 goals this season already. So, yeah, Roy Keane, there is massive, massive criticism. And obviously, whatever Roy Keane says, I'm not going to argue with the big man, because he'll probably knock us out if he sees us, and I've had a go at him. He's entitled to his opinion. He's a Manchester United legend, so he's not going to give any Man City player a lot of credit. However, I would love to see Haaland in big games be the guy that is getting all the headlines. There's so many games when you are looking to see Haaland perform and produce goals in big matches, he goes hiding. And I think Saliba and Gabriel just absolutely rattled him in this game. They were well up for the battle and they got on his head. They really got on his head. And when you're not, what would annoy me is Haaland, right? He's a great player. Not once did I see Man City try and play a long ball over the back to try and stretch them on the counter-attack or on a break. Did they cross the ball into the box for Haaland? Did in the last 5 minutes of the game. When they get in the wide areas, when you've got a fella like that, I'd love them just to change it up and mix it up sometimes to really disrupt, because they made it very, very easy for Arsenal when they got in their defensive block. So I'm not agreeing with Roy Keane. Haaland's a legend. He's not a League Two player. We'll see. He's top half of the Championship.
So he'd get into the Leeds team?
Not at this moment in time, he wouldn't. No, Phil. No, definitely not.
No. Thing is, maybe Haaland in 2023, because if you look at the stats and you look at the goals, it does feel like there has been a drop-off in form, and certainly there's been a drop-off in goal scoring since the turn of the year. I think he's only scored in three games since the turn of the year, maybe four games. No, I think it's three games he's scored in since the turn of the year. So there is something there. And he did have that one sort of half chance at the back post, which, I mean, he looked like he'd never played football when he took that chance. And he just completely misjudged the flight of the ball, didn't touch the ball when it came into the back post. And it was really strange to see that someone who was supposed to be a killer in the 6-yard box to quite mess it up as badly as that. By the way, you said, Bridgie, not many people go to the Etihad and keep a clean sheet. It was 57 games the last time that someone went there and kept a clean sheet. 57 games. So that just puts into perspective the job that Arsenal did. But also, I think, you know, Pep's, what did you think of his team selection, Swartzy? Because, you know, Kovacic there in midfield, the idea was to, they wanted to have control of the game, they wanted to have a little, have the ball, but they could have, you know, they could have had Doku, they could have had Alvarez, it could have been a little bit more proactive instead of bringing in Kovacic to have the ball a bit more, right?
Absolutely. I was certainly with Doku, not having Doku in the starting lineup. I was a little bit surprised. Look, the players they've got, obviously they've got so many talented, unbelievable players, and they could pick any number of a team to come up against Arsenal. I think Kovacic is a really good player. I like him. I like the fact, and he looks even better at City because of the options he has when he's on the ball, even off the ball. His movement is great. It just suits them down to the ground. So I don't think that's the big issue. I just feel this whole thing of frustration of how Arsenal supposedly, you know, sat deep and made it difficult for Manchester City. Look, Manchester City are so good. I expect them to create more chances. I expect them to hurt teams more. So the fact that they didn't is more on them than the opposition, right? Their record is phenomenal at home, has been phenomenal at home. Arsenal know they have the advantage in terms of points on the table, get a result, don't lose the game, go there, set up, get a result. So I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is okay, it didn't go to plan. Your team didn't actually play that well today. So take some of that responsibility. Probably inwardly, he probably will. Outwardly, he won't, because he will back his team every time. And I think that's the biggest frustration for him. His team didn't deliver at the moment of the season when they really needed to do, which is something they've done year after year after year of late. And I think that's probably the biggest surprise for a lot of us, because the bar is so high. That's also the same as Haaland, right? We're talking about Haaland. We're having a go at Haaland, or certainly Roy Keane was having a go at Haaland, because the bar is so, so high. If you look at his last three seasons, his goal to game return ratio is phenomenal. So this season you're going, look, he's still a good striker, a very good striker, but it's not world-class like it was over the last 3 years. So therefore, there's always going to be discussion about whether or not, you know, where he is, what sort of dip in form he has. But I do find with Haaland, there are times, Bridge, you'll know that you'll see this as well with him, is that there were times where you just feel that, does he do enough in the game? I got in trouble for saying that, didn't I, Phil? That just brought back memories. I got in trouble for mentioning someone who didn't do enough.
And
yeah, let's not go there. But does he do enough at times, Bridgie, in the game? Should he be more involved? Should he link up better? Should he, like Roy Keane said, actually Micah Richards actually mentioned it, talked about being that target man at times up front, holding the ball up, being that guy, because he's so big, so strong, he very rarely does that.
Yeah, but the thing is, he's been given a designated role. It was such a hard thing. We talked about this watching. I used to go drifting, as I call that. I used to love dropping into the pockets of the holes and coming in behind the defensive line, the midfield, and just try and disorganise the two centre-halves, knowing that you'd have a runner that would take the space that was vacated by the centre-halves. Pep Guardiola doesn't want that from him. Harry Kane does it so well. Other strikers do it so well, but you don't get that from Haaland. That's not his specific role, so It's such a tough role that he's being given, because if you're not seeing a lot of the ball, that would frustrate the hell out of me when you're not getting a lot of touches in the game. But he still keeps that high line to try and stretch the back four or the two centre-halves as much as he can to allow space for the midfield and the overload of what Pep Guardiola's ticky-tacky football is all about, how they try and do it. Now, for me, it's not getting the best out of Haaland, but he's doing a job for his manager and for his team, because that's what he's being asked to do. So it's a catch, because if Pep gives him the freedom, I'm sure you'd see Haaland drifting here, there and everywhere. He did it for Dortmund. He used to love dropping deep, and then he'd turn, put the afterburners on, the ball would go over the top, and they'd isolate the space in behind the defensive line as well with him. So he's not being allowed to do that, Schwartzy. So we've got to, I'm not going to criticise a striker that scores a lot of goals, because being in that position in my career, I used to get wrong sometimes off Peter Reid and David O'Leary when I would go drifting, because they said, we need you to stop coming back into the midfield and just stay and keep and entertain the high line. Only do it if you're going to have a rotation or swap positions with somebody. And City, they don't like to do like, they like to have a focal point with Haaland. So he's for me, he's doing a job that is being asked for him, and he's sticking to his discipline.
And he's still the top scorer in the Premier League. And you can't, I mean, I know I alluded to the the chance, the sort of half chance he had at the back post, which he could have shot, or he could have, I think he was actually trying to square it, but he didn't have any chance.
Phil, did you hear the comments of Gary Neville in that moment? It was so funny. I'm listening to the UK cut. He said he actually looked like he'd never played football before in that moment.
Yeah, which is maybe potentially a little bit harsh. I might have said something similar, but that was it. Like, he didn't really have anything else in the game. So are you, Schwartz, suggesting that he needs to try and make stuff happen for him, or the team aren't producing stuff for him because he didn't really have anything else? It's not like he's missed a ton of chances.
Cross the ball into the box for him and actually feed him and try and stretch the line. I don't think Man City, it's not Haaland. What I'm saying is he is not the problem. The problem is that the way City are playing, not using his, not maximising his ability, because I think the five goals he scored in the Champions League, it was in the early group stages, he scored five in a game, I do
Wasn't
believe.
Wasn't that in a cup?
Was it the cup? Was it? I think he's done it a couple of times this season. Whatever it was, Phil, they crossed the ball into the area for him, and he was just feeding and absolutely dominating. I haven't seen that in the last few games from City, but I'm not going to take it away from Arsenal. I know where the Spurs men, Phil. Arsenal were. They went with the job. They went with the discipline. Saliba and Gabriel and Declan Rice just absolutely controlled that game. And I think there's a lot of if there's any centre halves watching that and how to annoy Haaland and put him off his game plan, they kept chipping away at him. They were arguing with him. It still carried on over the 90 minutes. Gabriel was going up to him and saying, getting in his face and calling him a cheat and all this kind of thing because he took a dive in the area. They rattled his cage. Every time he got the ball, they went through him. So fair play to them. There's a lot of centre-halves who would have learned a lot about Haaland's mentality in that game.
Well, let's have a listen to what both managers had to say after that game.
I think defensively we were outstanding. We had to go and putting on the pressure higher of the pitch. I think we were really good and created a lot of difficulties. And when they are that good that they get you in this low block and it's very difficult to get out of that, they drop a lot of players. And I think we prevent him the spaces really well. And that's a difficulty. 3 years is the first time they haven't scored at home in 3 years.
Are you concerned that you've only got 27 points to play for, so you
right,
might run out of points?
It's not in our hands. Only we can do is... Aston Villa next game, try to, you know, to win the game. It's only we can do, because always we were top of the league, we were the favourites. It was in our hands, now it's not. So it's simple.
So Pep talked about the fact that it's not in his hands anymore. They've always been the team that sort of, they've been in the past the team that's led and people are chasing them. Now that it's not in their hands anymore, and it's, all he's thinking about is the next game against Aston Villa. I mean, what else is he going to say, Phil?
I mean, there were 8 points behind Arsenal last season at one point, and they chased them down. So, I mean, we're still waiting. Everyone's been saying, "Nah, City will just go on this run now, and they'll go and they'll you know string 12 wins together, and they'll go and win it." And we haven't seen that yet. I mean, it's been a tricky run of fixtures, but they've drawn 3 of the last 6. They have had some big games in that run with, you know, they played Liverpool, they played Arsenal. I think they drew against Chelsea as well. So, listen, it was. A run of fixtures that, you know, you could drop points in theory, but they haven't hit cruise control yet, and everybody is expecting this. And maybe it goes back to what you were saying before about expectations and levels, and City have generated such high expectations now that everybody, just by inertia, just by, oh yeah, it's City, they will do this, rather than actually thinking about specifically why it's going to happen, and it hasn't happened yet. It's not in their hands, because if Liverpool win the rest of their games, they are champions. But they're still going to be twists and turns. I can feel it. There's going to be a lot of twists and turns between the end of the season. It's 9 games, 27 points up for grabs. It's a lot. So few points separating the top three. So yeah,
bring it on.
It's fantastic, isn't it, Bridgie? I mean, this is historic. I don't want to get carried away, but this is historic. To have three teams separated by so few points at this level of the season is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm loving the running. Just going to get so excited. And I'm not sucking you in this week, Phil, by saying that Aston Villa and Tottenham are still in with it, because they're not. They're not. But the top three, let's just enjoy it for what it is. And like you say, I think that Arteta would have been on that bus going home very, very happy back down to London with it, probably having a glass of red wine to celebrate.
So I think Liverpool are going to win the title. I've said it before. I've been saying it for a few weeks now. I'm not sure if I said it at the start of the season, but I've been saying it for a few months. Schwartz, what do you think is going to happen between now and the end of the season? Who's going to win?
Look, I think obviously Liverpool are in the box seat. Goes without saying. They are the team that are leading 3 points ahead. Some big games still to come. They've got Europe. They've got Man United in a week's time. They've got Sheffield United midweek, which I don't think really should cause them much problems. But the Man United game is a big one for so many reasons, the rivalry and everything else on top of it, going to Old Trafford. If they can win that game, that can really set the stall out and make a massive statement. But bearing in mind, they've also got Spurs and Villa. Spurs at home, Villa away, 2 out of the last 3 games of the season. So, advantage Liverpool. Arsenal is and City, I think it's still too close to call. I can say that
get off the fence and give us an answer, man.
All right, I'm gonna say City are gonna win it.
Right, there you go, Phil. That's Swartz's give it the kiss of death. Liverpool have got the title.
Bridgie, what do you think?
I'm going to stick with City.
Isn't
I've said
it, you
it from
said
the
Brighton
start.
The title race.
He did.
I said they were title contenders, yeah. Phil, when they beat Man United early on this season. I got very carried away in the commentary. They were playing amazing. Absolutely amazing. They've kind of lost their way, yeah, definitely. But I'm sticking with City. I think Pep Guardiola, you've said they've chased Arsenal down before. They've got a lot of players in this situation, the box seat, and I just think they've got the numbers to deal with it. Even though obviously Walker and Ake are now on the injury list along with Edison, so they've got that to contend with. I'm sure they will. I'm going to stick with City.
I just think that was quite an ominous performance from Arsenal because it just showed a lot of know-how as well. They knew exactly what they needed to do. They produced a lot of fouls in that game as well. They disrupted Manchester City. It's a massive, massive result for them. It shows like a shift, I think, in previous seasons, and coming off the back of that 8-match winning streak, scoring lots of goals. If they get back on that kind of streak and... Oh, I don't know. It is a little bit. They've got Luton midweek, Brighton away. They've got Champions League as well, so I don't know. But that just felt ominous for me. I'm sticking with Liverpool. I'm still backing Liverpool to win. And I think there is a huge emotional surge with Klopp saying that he's leaving and that might get them over the line. But in terms of which team is in the best form at the moment and playing the best, I think Arsenal are playing the best at the moment.
And the thing about that is... Arsenal are probably playing the best, right? And if you look at their form, is insane in the Premier League, right? City are not playing particularly well, but they're only 3 points behind. So that's what, you know, City is still hanging in there They're still there or thereabouts.
If you ask me who I'd rather watch at this moment in time, between City and Arsenal, I'm turning Arsenal on. I'm watching Arsenal's games. I'm not particularly enjoying watching Man City play. So if that's anything to go by... I would actually rather that Arsenal won it for the way they've been playing, but I just think City have got it. So yeah, well, it's good that we're talking about it.
Absolutely. The other talking point would have to be the Liverpool against Brighton game. Liverpool came from 1-0 down, conceded after 90 seconds. What a finish though from Danny Welbeck. And they showed grit, they showed determination, they showed that desire, which you expect from Liverpool at Anfield, but they got it all right. And McAllister, got to mention him. I mean, what a player, what a performance. You talked about Declan Rice and how good he has been for Arsenal, and he has been. I'm going to say McAllister has been better, and certainly better value. Bridgie, what do you reckon?
I was going to say he's better value, Swartzy, and if you think of the magic moments that he has been involved with, big moments this season... for Liverpool with carving open goals or scoring goals himself. He's been absolutely monumental. Declan Rice, has no doubt about, has made a difference in the dynamics of Arsenal, the organisation, the leadership, defensive issues that they've had. But McAllister for Liverpool, mate, what a player. I've admired him for a number of years. I didn't actually think he could get any better than he has been in the past when it was Brighton, his international level, and he has. So he's playing with a lot better players in and around him, and his game's gone to a new level, mate. So he's up there with one of the signs of the season, if not the sign of the season. And yet again, Liverpool find a way at home. Swartzy, the highest attendance that they've had this far in their Premier League outings. Obviously, the new ground has been open, and that, and the atmosphere would have been unbelievable. I mean, I witnessed a good atmosphere at St James's Park when they came back to beat West Ham 4-3. By all accounts, Anfield was on a different level when they came back to do that, to go top of the league again. And it was just, you know, that man again, Mo Salah, scoring the winner. They're a force to be reckoned with. And I think Phil nailed it there. The players are playing a lot more this season as well, on a shoestring, because we've seen a lot of youngsters come in for Liverpool this season. They've been given the opportunity. Klopp has given them that opportunity. He's entrusted in them, and they've been performing, mate. And I think it's got a lot to do with Jurgen Klopp leaving at the end of the year, where they're just going that extra yard to get this man and the fans what they deserve.
And we're seeing impacts from substitutes as well, consistently from Liverpool. I think Liverpool, in terms of the squad, in terms of the group of players, it's possibly the best of the three that are chasing for the title, and whoever's come in has pretty much done well. So that's been very, very impressive. They've scored, I think, what is it? They've won more points from losing positions than anyone in the league this season, which speaks of perseverance. It also speaks of options as well from the bench and people coming in and changing things up. And speaking of perseverance, Mo Salah, by the way, he had 11 shots in this game. Personal record for him. He's never had 11 shots in a match, and he finally managed to score with one of them. So, yeah, it was a kind of Liverpool-ish performance that we've been accustomed to seeing in recent weeks. Getting over the line, McAllister pulling strings in midfield, creating chances, not necessarily taking them, and in the end, getting the goal and getting the win.
So what we talked about superstars, and we've talked about players that have signed. Another one was Szoboszlai as well. I think he's a machine. He just doesn't stop running. He should be a marathon runner. I want to ask you about Kelleher. Alisson has been out, the goalkeeper. He's been monumental for Liverpool. Kelleher's come in, and mate, how good is he?
He's brilliant. Yeah, I said it earlier on a couple of weeks ago, I think, in the podcast, when Kelleher got it back in the when he's back in the team because of Alisson's injury. It's a very interesting moment for Liverpool and their goalkeeping situation. And I say that with the utmost respect because Alisson has been absolutely phenomenal. The decision, I mean, is for Kelleher. What does he do? Does he stick or does he go? You know, Klopp is obviously leaving in the summer. Alisson, does Alisson see this as a moment? If Liverpool got to win the league and maybe Europa League, and you know, do players like Alisson go, you know what? It's a moment where I can move on. Klopp's moved on. Now I'm going to move. I don't know. I'm just completely speculating. But there's certainly big decisions to be made because I just don't see Kelleher staying as a number two. He has to be a number one somewhere. In my opinion, yeah. So something has to give one way or the other.
He's proven he's a number one, hasn't he?
He absolutely has, yeah. And the other huge topic that we have to talk about, or just briefly, is about Roberto De Zerbi. He spoke after the game. He left the door open for a move to Liverpool when he asked for these plans for next season. He mentioned he's got a 2-year contract, but he said that that would determine what Brighton's thoughts are, what their plans are moving forward as to... Didn't say it, but really is whether or not he would be interested in staying longer or not. Here's what he had to say.
But I have another 2 years of contract, and my focus is on Brighton this season, the next season. But the next season, before to start the season, I would like to speak and I would like to listen the plan of the team. But I think it's a serious thing, no? Different.
So De Zerbi, like I said, 2 years left in his contract, happy, but he wants to know what Brighton's plans are moving forward. Phil, you know, De Zerbi, he's actually been spoken about by quite a few clubs. He's been linked to quite a few clubs. Barcelona was even mentioned as a potential spot for De Zerbi to go to. Is he one of the hottest properties at the moment in management?
I think he is, and I think he knows it, and I think that answer is a manager who knows that he's got options and knows that in the summer there will be plenty of teams interested in him, one of them being Barcelona. If they can entice him, if they can show him that they might have money, because that's a big problem for them. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You don't often hear a manager be quite so, because I mean, he didn't say I'm leaving, obviously, but he's left a door open there that you don't often hear unless it's pretty clear that he's leaving in the summer. So yeah, that was quite telling.
But he's playing his cards right, isn't he, Bridgie? Because the fact is, he knows he's got power, he knows he's got interest, so now it's going to put a bit pressure back on Brighton. And then if Brighton go, look, this is what we're doing, and we've only got this amount of money, or whatever, we're going to continue the same way, it gives him an opportunity to go, yes, I want to be on board, or no, that's not enough for me anymore.
It's a great response from the manager. You always want to sit down and find out what you're doing next season and what the plans are going forward for the football club. You've all got to try and be on the same page, and De Zerbi's just playing the right game, Swarty, mate. He knows there's a lot of interest. Like I say, I'm a massive fan of his, the way they've been playing. He would have loved to have McAllister under his belt, but he's gone to Liverpool. So I think the joy to know that you can go to open the door, and you know that these opportunities don't come up very often. You've got to put yourself in the shop window from the job that he has done. And he's been very, very smart. He's got good advice from whoever is advising him, Swartzy. They are very, very clever. I don't know who is behind his genius comments and what he's come out with, but the timing is absolutely perfect. He's playing poker. He's got the aces in his hand. He's not showing anybody else, and he's going to wait to see what the other moves are. And I'm sure he will come out on top, mate. And I think if you're a Liverpool fan, and obviously Alonso is doing amazing things in the Bundesliga, he's kind of talked his way out of that one. I would be so happy if I knew that De Zerbi was going to be coming to my club, and no doubt about it. So if that does happen, I think there's never any smoke without a fire. So there's something burning away there. And watch this space, I would say. Watch this space.
Bridget, you just mentioned there, Alonso. Just quickly, right decision or wrong decision for him to stay at Bayer Leverkusen?
Oh, for me, Swartzy, if you've got a chance to go to Liverpool, you can't turn that down. I think it's the wrong decision. He should have jumped at the opportunity, or Liverpool, they should have tried to do something. Can he replicate that in the Bundesliga against Germany? What he's done, mate, leave a legacy of what you have done and absolutely annihilated Bayern Munich when they've been such a powerhouse. I would have jumped ship straight away. But fair play to him. He must be a man of his values. Let's hope that if he's made that decision, he sticks by it.
There might be another former club that he played for that could be interested in him. So maybe he's playing his cards, and maybe he's thinking that the Real Madrid job might come up in the summer, despite Carlo Ancelotti signing that contract extension. If, you know, Real Madrid win the league and the Champions League, Carlo might just think, you know what, I'm off.
That's why we get Phil on here. He comes up with the scoops, the high scoops. Love it.
Well, yeah, sensationalist speculation maybe instead of scoops, but yeah.
You obviously know something, Phil. Come on, give us another rundown. What's going on?
I know that he's, you know, he's not out of the running for the Real Madrid job in the future. And there might be a scenario where Carlo Ancelotti leaves this summer, and then there is a very realistic scenario that Xavi Alonso is the front runner for that job.
Oof, I'd rather live in Madrid than Liverpool. Sorry, Liverpool fans.
Me too, mate.
But I don't think he'll leave Bayer Leverkusen now. The fact that he said, my job is not
here. Maybe not.
I think he could have left the door open by just saying, no, it's not the right time for me for that job. But the fact he said is, my job is not done here. These are the players I want to work with, and there's more to be done here at Bayer Leverkusen. I don't think he'll move on. And I have to admire his decision. I know he's been criticised by various people, whether it's clickbait or whatever it is. I think it's really clever of him because, yes, he takes a gamble. Yes, maybe those jobs will never, ever come up at the same time. But I've got no doubt if he keeps his trajectory like he has, he's got self-belief in his own ability. I believe staying there and trying to improve as a manager, get more out of those players, I think is a good, clever move. We've seen it before, Gerrard, Lampard. We've seen big name players do reasonably well firstly and then fall away massively when given a really, really big job. So I don't have a problem with it, Bridgie.
Swartzy. What we have also seen is that managers like Michael Beale of QPR said, I am not going to leave this football club for Wolves. I am a man of my values and principles. I am sticking by it. I am seeing out this calendar year with QPR. 2 weeks later, he's off to Rangers as the manager. So, you know, managers do change their minds very, very quickly. Let's hope that Alonso is a man of his word, values and principles, and he sticks with it. Or, like Phil says, we may see him at Real Madrid, which would be absolutely massive.
Your team, Bridgie, Spurs, come from behind again. How often can they keep doing it this season?
I don't know whatever Ange is saying or doing at half time. Why doesn't he try it before the game? Because then they'll come out and start scoring first or winning games. It was such a slow start yet again. And it wasn't until Brendan Johnson came on. Now, you don't want to have the tag of a super sub. You know, I hated having that at Sunderland. I wanted to be a starter. And you want to do that, but man, he came on and changed the game for Kulusevski's second half, and then it was just one-way traffic.
Were you a superstar?
A super sub, Swartzy. I've never been a superstar. I was a super sub. That was my name, mate. All right, the Northeast super sub. I didn't like...
No, so I mean, were you ever a super sub? A subway, but not super sub, I'm not sure.
Stop it, you. I had the little tag. The stick man used to come on and produce results for Sunderland. And the tag became too long. Now, Brendan Johnson's kind of getting this. He's an impact. He's changing the game. And I've got to say, since he came at half-time, whatever was said, the second half, the chances created were outrageous. It could have been 4, 5, 6 or 7. In fair play, you know, to Luton. I admire what they are all about. I really, really feel for Edwards because there's a load of games this season where they just haven't been able to hold on. And yet again, it was obviously Spurs, but they just couldn't get out. Once Spurs were in their groove, it was absolutely lovely to watch yet again. But first half, my word, I don't know what the players are doing prior to the game, but they need to change the whole ritual.
I think the difference that Brennan Johnson make was very evident because of the player that he replaced, and that was Kulusevski. I think Kulusevski looks tired. He looked really, really tired in this game. So then if you get the super sub Brennan Johnson coming on and he looks anything but tired, despite being away with Wales in the international break, he looked 100 miles an hour. So that made the difference look even more egregious. But yeah, he's a player that I haven't necessarily been convinced by at the start of the season. I think there's been an adaptation. Obviously, he's coming from Nottingham Forest, where they were playing a different, very different style of football, where he's got to play now with Ange Postecoglou at Spurs. So there has been a level of adaptation, I think, for Brennan Johnson, and serious competition for places. And I think he only really got a run in the team where there were a lot of people out and unavailable. And now they are seemingly all back and there is a bit more competition for places. But he's improved. He's improved massively. He played through the middle, I think, for Wales as well as a sort of central striker on international duty. And you can tell he's got a lot of confidence and playing really well.
Yeah, it's a big step up, right, isn't it? From Nottingham Forest to Tottenham, the expectation, what is expected from you day in, day out, being a kid coming through the academy at Forest to now big transfer fee being paid for him. Phil, fourth place, very much on the cards, right? I mean, I know that, you know, there's still enough games in play. There's enough points up for grabs. Do you feel Tottenham have kind of the momentum to take them ahead of Villa?
No. Because I have no idea what's going to happen with either. I think both Spurs and Villa, and if we're just about including Manchester United in this fourth place chat, I think they're
please.
All right, we're not. Okay, fine. Spurs and Villa. Sorry. I was doing a bridgey there and making a wild prediction, wild suggestion.
They've got Chelsea. Man, you've got Chelsea, then Liverpool, mate. They're gone. Let's just talk about Villa and Spurs.
Okay. But Villa and Spurs are so wildly unpredictable. They have been so inconsistent the last few weeks that it's been difficult to know what kind of team you're going to get. Spurs have got West Ham away, then then Forest at home, but then they've got Newcastle, they've got Arsenal, they've still got to play Manchester City as well. They've got a really tough run in, they've got to play Liverpool. So there are some really big games for Spurs coming up, and I don't know what's going to happen with Spurs. And, you know, earlier on in the season we were, you know, enjoying it. It's been fun watching them and we're here for the ride. This game wasn't great. I mean, the second half was much better than the first half, but overall it still wasn't amazing. Coming off the back of that abysmal performance against Fulham that came out of absolutely nowhere, which came off the back of smashing Villa 4-0. So it has been a little bit unpredictable for Spurs.
Can we just say, it might have been unpredictable, Phil, what's going to happen towards the end of the run-in, but the amount of people that were questioning Ange Postecoglou's appointment when Spurs were announced. Me and Swartzy have seen him, we've seen hands-on. We've seen how he's operated over numerous number of years and the way he's gone about his business. I was so confident of what he was able and going to bring to Tottenham Hotspur. I think any fan, if you ask them now, doesn't matter where this season finishes or where Spurs end up, they're going to say, do you know what it is? From playing defensive football over a numerous amount of years, the excitement and entertainment level of this team has just been breathtaking to watch. And for me, I'd rather be doing that and watching Ange's football than leaving games 10, 15 minutes early. So I think what Spurs fans, we've got to be very, very careful of. You know, there was a few boos at half-time. They were disgruntled because of what had gone on and being behind. Just be careful what you wish for because, you know, this man is taken Tottenham places. And like you say, if he does get a Champions League finish, that's incredible. You think the short turnaround time that he had to come in and do a job and losing Harry Kane, let's not forget. So fair play to Ange in the running. I'm just going to enjoy it for what it is because there's a lot of big games to come. And like you say, Phil, it could be the highs or it could be a very, very horrendous end of the season. But tick for Ange Postecoglou and the way he's actually given the club a bit of DNA and a style of football.
Yeah, both Aston Villa and Spurs have massive games to play between now and the season. And then I think both runs are pretty tough. Both of them have really tough fixtures coming in. So equally like winning the Premier League title, those three, Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City, Aston Villa, I think, and Tottenham will go down to the wire as to who finishes in that fourth Champions League place. This is what Ange Postecoglou had to say after that win against Luton Town.
Yeah, I think we hit the post once. Another one, I don't know how it didn't go in. So we've scored two goals. I still think we had good quality chances. But like you said, they defended deep. They defended desperately. And from our perspective, the only disappointing part of the day for me was conceding the goal. It was a really poor goal for us to concede. And aside from that, I thought the rest of the game, we played some good football.
Guys, he mentions about the chances he thought he played. His team played well. He said Luton, you know, dropped in deep. I mean, Spurs should have won the game more comfortably, Phil. I mean, Son's chance, even at, you know, they were 1-0 down. He's hit both posts. There was a follow-up from Werner that got blocked. Then the next block was from Saar. I mean, normally those go in. One of those goes in.
Yeah. I mean, there were chances. And shout out to Son, by the way. I thought he was tremendous for the whole game, yeah. And the energy that he brought after being on international duty in Asia. I think he played against Thailand. He was in Thailand and he's flown back and he's played with that kind of energy, that kind of leadership, and scoring his 160th goal for Spurs. Just quite extraordinary. So, yeah, a shout out to Son, who got Spurs over the line.
And the goal line technology. What about that save on the line, man? Wow. I started celebrating.
Yeah.
Could it get any closer? Bridget, that's all we've got time for you. Just before you go, just quickly, Spurs, will they finish in the top four?
I am going to say no, Swarty. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I'm going to say no. The games that they have coming up, I can't see them doing that, unfortunately. I'm going to say that they will be fifth or sixth. Reverse psychology.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Looking ahead to the midweek fixtures, we already mentioned City take on Aston Villa. Chelsea play Manchester United in the Battle of the Fallen Giants. That is going to be a very interesting fixture, isn't it, Phil? I mean, Chelsea, Man City. And obviously, City Villa is a massive game in the context of winning the Premier League, or certainly getting back in touch with it, or closing that gap with the top leaders, but also Villa securing that fourth place. But Chelsea and Manchester United, so much to play for. Pride, Man United still hoping that they could finish in a European place, as with Chelsea, right?
Shall we try and come up for a name for this derby? Because there's two sides in quite similar situations. The derby of massive disappointment, the derby of underwhelmingness, the derby of... I don't know. You got anyone got any suggestions for this? Because yeah, they're two sides who have massively underperformed this season, particularly whatever Chelsea seem to do. Schwartzy, they're always 11th. Win, lose or draw. I look at the table; they're always 11th, and they're in the bottom half of the table, and they really, really shouldn't be. So yeah, it's a huge game for both of them. I say that. I mean, you know, what are Chelsea playing for now? Like, you know, pride, or are they playing to try and finish seventh, which they're only 4 points off? I don't know, but it's just so underwhelming from Chelsea that they need to go on a serious run now, and then maybe they can finish sixth or seventh. But yeah, it's been so disappointing for them that it's the kind of season that they shouldn't, but it makes you just think, right, let's just start everything again. That's it. Bring in a new player, a new manager. Let's just rip it all up. This isn't working. Let's do it all again. So yeah, it's a big one. Just watch, see the derby of massive disappointment.
Very unlikely that Chelsea go on an amazing run between now and the end of the season to finish in one of those European places. I just can't see it. Man United, maybe they'll finish. They'll finish, I think, in a European place. It just won't be the Champions League. I think that's way out of their grasp these days. But anyway, it'll be back to the drawing board for Man United, and certainly for Chelsea, because there's so many things that are still not right at both those clubs. This week, we're going to move on to the WSL. Arsenal women's team defeated Emma Hayes as Chelsea in the Conti Cup, 1-0 after extra time. Stinia Blackstinius with the only goal. Narelle and Ash, join us now for the women's football wrap on Optus Sport to discuss that game and a whole lot more.
Yeah, thanks, Schwartzy. That goal from Stinia Blackstinius helping Arsenal to their seventh Continental Cup. But Ash, sadly, the match has been overshadowed by an ugly incident sideline after the match. Emma Hayes clashing with Jonas Ardevall, you could say.
Yeah, I think heading into the match, Emma Hayes was careful to say like how important she thought this game was for them, like in terms of silverware. I think it certainly showed through post-game. She had a little bust up with Ardevall, didn't really want to shake his hand, ran into each other, a little shove away. I think Emma Hayes continued arguing with one of the assistants and then had a bit to say in the post-match conference. So she was obviously very, very passionate and disappointed to miss out on the cup there. What do you think about the incident? Do you think this is just regular manager sideline antics?
I'm not sure. So this is basically stemmed from what happened during the match when Erin Cuthbert was wanting to take a throw in quickly and she was asking just for any ball, the closest ball. But the problem that Jonas Ardevall had with that is because before the match, Chelsea only wanted the match to be played with one ball. Arsenal wanted multiple. So, you know, goes out quickly, throw it in, whatever. But no, that wasn't the case until it suited Chelsea and they wanted it quickly. Yep. And then Erin Cuthbert actually showed up to Jonas on the sideline. So I guess Emma Hayes was, protecting her player, right, going into bat for her. But then, yeah, her post-match comments about how she thought he showed male aggression, I just don't think that's necessary. I mean, I don't think he was any worse than what we see some of the Premier League managers doing week in, week out.
Yeah, like I would have a general discussion overall as to what behaviour is acceptable by a manager on the sidelines in general, whether you're male or female. That's what I would have a discussion over, not just Jonas Ardevall's ones. I would say this isn't the first time that his antics on the sideline have been called into question. I think it was against Martha Thomas when she was playing for Man United last season that he sort of did the similar sort of thing. So maybe, you know, maybe he needs to consider whether he should be, talking to opposition players like that.
Yeah.
Otherwise he's going to cop a spray. But either way, it's entertaining on the sideline to match what was on the field, which was great.
Yeah, well, once again, none of the Aussie girls started, but they came on and made the difference. Caitlin Ford, unlucky not to be credited with the assist there, but a great day for them. And they just seem to show up in those big matches. This is the second title they've won in a row, beating Chelsea again. This is Chelsea's final, their third final they've lost back to back to back. So surely if you're Emma Hayes, you're thinking, what is going wrong? When they wanted a quadruple, that's not going to happen anymore.
They just can't get this League Cup final, can they? You know, like, but I was super happy to see that left side, Steph Catley to Caitlin Ford to Stina Blackstenius to score. It's great sort of reinforcement as how good the Aussies can do in these big moments. And, you know, on the reverse, I think this is where Chelsea really, really miss Sam Kerr. Like that, these moments in the final, she can pull something out of the bag and they were missing that last night. So, you know, this is where Chelsea might struggle in their hunt for the quadruple. They've got a few tough ties coming up.
Just quickly, how do you think Arsenal will be celebrating this trophy?
I think the way back on the bus was going to be pretty rowdy, wasn't it? I think even the coaching staff said they might get a bit rowdy. They at least don't have international break to go to.
True, very true.
I can't blame them, to be honest. You know, it might save his job there at Arsenal.
Well, happy days for Arsenal. Not so much for Chelsea fans. The quadruple is out of the picture. And Schwartzy, are Chelsea going to get anything this season?
Well, yes, it's the first major trophy that Chelsea haven't won. So the quadruple is out of the question. The treble is still very much in play for Chelsea. It is a worry because the game wasn't great. Chelsea, yeah, they had a chance at a goal disallowed for handball. They had another half a chance. They didn't take it. Yeah, it's a little bit concerning. Emma Hayes' reaction post-game, immediately after the final whistle with Arsenal manager Ardevall, it wasn't great viewing. I'm not sure. I'm a bit worried about Chelsea at the moment. It's all about the bounce back, how they perform in that very next game. And that's going to be, for me, very, very telling as to what will happen for the remainder of the season. But I think they're just a little bit on the edge at the moment and need to regroup, need to get their heads back together, calm down a little bit and get some results under their belt again. I mean, I think it's a big dent to their confidence going forward, because there's a lot of players there, I think, are running close to their limits in terms of all the injuries they sustained this season.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Taylor Tsitis.
Kayla
Carla, it's Sinners. I'm Carla Sinners, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
It's La Liga time, Phil. Your favourite part of the show, of course. Well, of course it will be. It's your bread and butter, right? You live there in Madrid. You see it firsthand. You work on La Liga. Barcelona, I mean, they struggled to win the game in the end in terms of the scoreline, but it was a pretty dominating performance from Barcelona, wasn't it? Against Las Palmas.
They beat Las Palmas 1-0 on Saturday night, and Las Palmas had their goalkeeper sent off after 24 minutes, and he's one of the best goalkeepers in the division as well. So they really probably should have scored more than just one. But the story of this game is, or the headline maybe, is João Félix coming off the bench to create the winner, and he really was brilliant. A beautiful ball in for Rafinha to score. And he was pretty dominant, pretty involved. He had a really, 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 really good chance to score a second, which would have wrapped up the game, which he didn't take. And yeah, João Félix is an enigma, continues to be an enigma, continues to be someone that we don't see perform consistently week in, week out, continues to be someone who we don't know where he's going to be playing next season, because I'm sure Barcelona would quite like to get him for another cheap loan again if they can. Atletico Madrid would absolutely love to sell him for a lot of money, which they probably can't. It's a conundrum which this season hasn't really done too much to change his position. We thought he might go to Barcelona and thrive and shine, and they'll buy him and it'll all end up happy ever after. But that's not going to happen. So I'm not sure what the situation is and what the future holds for João Félix. But against Las Palmas, he came on and played the last half an hour and did very, very well indeed.
I'm glad that you mentioned the miss that he had 5 yards out, hit the crossbar. Wow. I mean, you just think, oh, it's 2-0, done, game's done. And that would have capped off an unbelievable cameo of half an hour, because his ball over to Rafinha was absolutely exquisite, absolutely phenomenal. Other question I want to ask you is there's been some talk, I read, that the vice president of Barcelona is supposedly trying to convince Xavi to stay on. Is there any rumour in that one? The truth in that rumour, sorry.
There's a lot of suggestions that Xavi might stay on at the end of the season. How much of them are based in actual fact? It's difficult to know, because the manager himself has said no, 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 no. And then he started saying, he used a Spanish phrase, a día de hoy, which means almost like at the time of speaking, no, which is a slight but a very important caveat, I would say. But I mean, he was asked, even if you win the Champions League, will you stay? And he said no. So he has been pretty definitive, but it's difficult. It's just difficult to imagine him just walking away from this job. I mean, he is Barcelona, Xavi. I mean, through and through. And for him to just walk away, however exhausted and disappointed he is with the situation, it's difficult for everyone to comprehend. And there has been an improvement in the results since he said he was going. So maybe that is something which is not in his favour in terms of staying. So I don't know whether they're trying to convince him. It is a bit of a problem, him leaving, to be honest, for them. They need to try and find someone to come in, and they have the budgetary constraints that they have. So him staying on would make things a lot easier. So I would not be surprised at all if they were trying to make him convince his mind. But he's been pretty clear. He's been pretty clear that he's leaving.
Do you think it could be also a bit of a play out in terms of a bit of power play? Because Xavi obviously got criticised heavily. His tactics, everything was being questioned, decision making, his post-match interviews. Now they've got a bit of form. If they were to go on and win the Champions League, which I think is unlikely, but you never know, they're still in the competition, they could. And there is an outside chance they could still push Real Madrid all the way to win La Liga title, right? So if they were to happen, certainly La Liga title, that would up his stock value even more so, and give him more power to potentially sort of shut down all the doubters, right? Or not?
Maybe, but I don't think they're going to win the Champions League, and they're not going to win La Liga because they're 8 points behind Real Madrid with 8 games to go. So I can't see that happening. But yeah, if he were to win both of those competitions, then sure, he would have more margin to maybe negotiate things that he wasn't happy with. But no, I think the most likely scenario is that he does walk away, even though, like I said, it is difficult for us to comprehend someone of his stature within the club just going of his own accord, which always seemed a very difficult scenario to envisage, but it's what's probably going to happen.
You mentioned Real Madrid, 8 points clear of Barcelona. They won yesterday against Athletic Club Bilbao 2-0 at home. Rodrigo with a double. I mean, his first goal was pretty special, wasn't it?
It was a really lovely goal, and it was quite a Rodrigo-esque goal as well, cutting in from the left and drifting in and finishing on the edge of the penalty area with his right. I mean, him and Vinicius actually are pretty good at that specific move. And yeah, he's on 10 league goals now for this season, Rodrigo, which is his best ever scoring tally. He's been a bit hot and cold this season. I think it's fair to say he's had moments when he's looked brilliant and moments when he's gone quite a few games without scoring, and he has been questioned. But his natural raw ability is potentially more than Vinicius. And I know Vinny is an incredibly talented player and he's explosive, and there's a lot of off the field talk about him as well, and a lot gets mentioned and written about him. But Rodrigo quietly, I think, might have a higher skill set than Vinny, but he doesn't necessarily show it on a consistent level. Maybe that's being unfair, I don't know. But this season he's blown a little bit hot and cold, but it was really important for Real Madrid last night. Two really good goals. The second goal as well is a excellent finish after a brilliant breakaway. So comfortable for Real Madrid, and it was important for them to get that lead back up to 8 points. And now you really, really can't see them blowing this. And they're going to be champions, Mark, as predicted by your favourite La Liga journalist at the start of the season.
I didn't realise Jules was classed as a La Liga journalist. But anyway.
Me, Schwartzy. It was me.
Sorry, Phil. Yeah, you did say, I do remember. I don't know. I feel that it could be a twist. It could be. Just maybe. I don't know. The other thing that it stood out for me, which was really interesting, and obviously maybe many people didn't notice it, I did look it up as well, and I couldn't find any reason as to why Unai Simón wasn't playing. He was on the bench. Agizar Zabala was in goal, another Basque name that's really difficult to pronounce. Why is that? Do we know?
We do, because it's the Copa del Rey final next weekend. So there's no La Liga, unfortunately, for you on Optus Sports. The Copa del Rey final. And Julen Agirrezabala is
okay,
the cup goalkeeper. He's played in every round of the cup. He's going to play the final as well. But he hadn't played in the league, so he was getting a few minutes before the cup final.
There you go. Thank you very much for that, because I was a bit surprised. He played, obviously, for Spain midweek. Made a mistake against Brazil trying to play out, but those things happen. And he's obviously Spain's number one, and he's regarded as one of the best goalkeepers, certainly in Spain. So I was a little bit surprised to see him on the bench. So as you mentioned, Phil, there's a break this weekend in Spain for the Spanish Cup final. Before the action returns mid-April, Atletico de Madrid take on Girona in a match that could seal Champions League football for Girona. I mean, that is just mad in itself. I mean, we talked about Girona being up there and potentially winning La Liga title. That obviously is not going to happen. But them to finish in Champions League football would be remarkable.
It certainly would. It's a big ask, by the way, to go and win at the Metropolitano against Atletico Madrid. Only Barcelona have won there in the last year and a half. I think it's been a long time since another team that wasn't Barcelona won a game at the Metropolitano. So for Girona to go there, and there has been a bit of a drop-off in Girona's form. It's been a drop-off in their goal scoring as well, even though they won 3-2 this weekend against Betis. They've been a little bit underwhelming in previous weeks. So yeah, they're running out of steam, obviously, because they do not have the squad to compete with the other sides that are up there battling for Champions League football. But their first 11 has a very particular and hard work style of play, and we've seen it throughout the season that they are capable of causing anyone problems. They beat Atletico Madrid in Girona earlier on this season. I think it was around Christmas, was it? 4-3 in a tremendous, tremendous game. Really one of the best games of the season in terms of entertainment. So It should be a terrific game, one which Atleti desperately need to win, because for them not finishing in a Champions League spot would be catastrophic financially. So a really, really fascinating game, and one that everybody should tune in to watch, because even if the title race might be not looking particularly close, the battle to finish in top four certainly is. And yeah, watch that one, because it should be really good. It's on at a good time as well, I think, in Australia. It's the 2 p.m. kickoff Saturday in Spain. So I think it's a decent time in Australia for everyone to watch.
The other team I want to talk about is my team, Cadiz. They won at home on the weekend against Granada, 1-0, which was absolutely huge for them, because it gets them in touching distance with Celta Vigo, who only drew on the weekend in apparently an amazing game that you've witnessed against Rayo Vallecano. Was that true, Phil? Have I got something wrong?
It was a really, really bad game between Celta Vigo and Rayo, a 0-0. Not for the first time this season. I was in Vallecas where they played out another 0-0 earlier on this season. Just two, like, just stratospherically bad games. At least this one, Celta hit the post at the end, and there were some seagulls on the pitch, which was quite interesting. But apart from that, it was rubbish. It was really, 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 really poor. Cadiz, by the way, they beat Granada with an absolutely beautiful goal from Robert Navarro, who's on loan from Real Sociedad, and a really, really quality player. I know some people at the club, and they would absolutely love to keep him, because he's a terrific quality player, and we saw that. There's a little ray of hope for Cadiz. Not a huge amount, but there is a tiny little ray of hope for them, because they're only 3 points from safety. And yeah, they haven't been scoring goals. They're the lowest scorers in the division, but hey, if you've got flashes of quality from people like Robert Navarro, you've got a chance.
I'm going to put my head on the chopping board there. I'm going to say Cadiz are going to do it. They're going to get out of relegation. They're going to survive in La Liga, which will be absolutely huge for Cadiz. But anyway, a lot of games still to be played. 8 games. They can do it, Phil. I know they can. Right, that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you very much, Phil, for joining us as always. Remember, Optus Sport is the only place you can watch the Premier League title race, La Liga, J League, K League, and the WSL live, as well as the Euro 24 and Copa America in a few months' time. See you next week on the Optus Sport Football Podcast.